If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week, and also all seven PW Torch livecasts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it. pwtorchvipinfo.com.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Rich, is there a wrestler today in WWE who seems to have more of Vince McMahon's confidence than Drew McIntyre?
I don't think there's anyone on the roster right now, short of God. No, there's no one. I was going to say short of Roman Reigns, but he's no longer really on the roster, is he?
No.
So I would say Drew McIntyre, to the point where, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it later when we talk about his interactions with Dolph Ziggler. They took the best part of the last 2 months of his indie run and fast forwarded it into a segment and a half of Raw. And I was shocked that they did everything they did with him tonight. He's been nothing short of amazing in the last few weeks, and this has been a really cool thing to see live.
What I in particular like about Drew right now is there's no cleverness. I mean, there's nothing where they're going for laughs. He's not the product of a writing team that's trying to make anyone laugh backstage or create a buzz on social media about I can't believe he said that or a laugh line. This is Drew playing a character that fits into any money-making heel push, or it would fit as a money-making heel push in any era, not just the so-called sports entertainment era with augmented rules that stray away from sound booking to make people anticipate a match and more towards trying to entertain the fans in the meantime who maybe aren't, quote, pro wrestling fans, unquote. I just think Drew is so on target right now with this heel character. He's dominating, but he's not getting cheered. And fans tend to like badasses, but he's finding that sweet spot where that's not happening. What's the key, and is that a risk at all for Drew, that he might end up getting cheered after all if he continues to dominate like this? I thought beating up Dolph, if you would have told me that 3 months ago, I'd have said Drew would get cheered. And while Dolph wasn't cheered a lot in this seeming babyface turn, he was certainly the more sympathetic figure here. Drew was not cheered at all. He was booed for the attack on a guy who's been pretty obnoxious for months and months and months and months in Dolph.
I'd actually argue Wade years and years and years, but I'm sure that's a conversation for another day.
Yes.
I think one of the things that helped is also that the entire night you had someone looking out for the faces' backs in the form of Finn Balor, so you never really had a chance other than that short tete-a-tete on the promo where it was just Drew and someone that possibly could have had that win taken out of their sails, so to speak.
How do you feel about Drew getting pinned by Ziggler, even with Finn Balor helping out? I know Zach Hainorn questioned that in his Raw report on PWTorch.com tonight, saying that, you know, he was protected, but he still wouldn't have gone there. And although it does obviously further the feud with Balor and McIntyre, now that Balor was responsible for Drew losing to Ziggler.
That kind of ties in what I was saying a few minutes ago. This reminds me of the end of his Evolve run where he had a tag team with Johnny Gargano, and every chance he could, he would beat him up and grab a mic and say, I'm trying to help you. I would try my horrible Drew McIntyre impersonation, but I don't want my listeners to be offended. So for my own sake, I won't have that used against me. But yeah, so I was hoping they would just use this week as a chance for Drew, when I saw him grab the mic and was beating on Dolph, to set that stage, and then maybe they have a match next week. But they kind of put it in there. I personally would have preferred not to see him lose, even if it was the countout spot at the end there where he was staggering and maybe he just barely doesn't make it in. But catching the super kick and losing like that kind of felt a little icky to me. But I overall have been impressed with how they're treating Drew, so I don't feel like they're going to put him in a position where that's more often than not the result for him.
All right, very good. Let's set the table and introduce ourselves. I'm Wade Keller, host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, following the Monday, December 3rd edition of Monday Night Raw. And I'm joined by Rich Fan, host of the PW Torch Livecast Deep Dive. And Rich, it is great to have you back on the program. We'll have you talk about your participation not only in the Deep Dive, but the East Coast Cast VIP version and other plugs for you in a little bit. But welcome back to Livecast, or welcome back to the Wade Keller Post Show. Good to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me, and I always enjoy my time, so I'm looking forward to this.
Excellent. So we're going to take some phone calls, so get in line. Give us a call. Our phone number here is 347-215-8558. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think of Dolph Ziggler and what they did with Drew McIntyre tonight? Did they get heat behind Finn Balor again, or heat him up again with what they did? And obviously, Ronda Rousey in action on Raw. That doesn't happen very often. Did they treat it as a big enough deal, and did they accomplish what they wanted to with Rousey and Ember Moon replacing an injured Natalya in an angle earlier in the night against Tamina and Nia Jax in the main event? And Dean Ambrose with a big promo coming out in a gas mask, insulting the fans, insulting Houston in particular, and even a Carmelo Anthony joke thrown in, which is just way too low. And then that led to Seth running out in a brawl where Dean got the better of him. So that and a number of other factors, a number of other big happenings on this show and some minor ones too. So give us a call, 347-215-8558. We've got an on-site correspondent lined up for later, and then we'll answer your email questions. So if you're listening live but can't participate with a phone call, just email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com.
Unmuted.
And if you want to call our show, if you're listening and you have called up, you have to push 1 on your keypad to participate in the program. So be sure to push 1 after calling to indicate that you don't just want to stand by, but you want to be part of the show. So, Rich, I'm a fan of what they did with Drew tonight, and I'm kind of curious. Do you think that that Ziggler was just fodder to tell to advance the story with Drew and Balor, or is there something else going on with Ziggler where they're actually factoring him into this in a way where this is going to lead him to more of a feud with Drew, or perhaps a babyface run against Drew and then against others? Or does he just kind of go back? Like, what's next for Ziggler? Did it seem like this was focused on him at all?
I think it was. I think the win wasn't shown as a fluke. It wasn't something where he slipped on a banana peel. I think him being able to kind of hold his own in the conversation leading to the fight leads me to think that Dolph Ziggler is going to have a little bit of life in him after Drew, but I don't know how much life that's going to be, especially when they keep positing all of their key baby faces as too small compared to the heels. And that would be my one quibble with most of tonight.
Drew saying that you're too small.
Well, Drew saying you're too small, them constantly saying the same thing about Finn Balor.
Got it.
And then even the weirdness where you had a face beating up on the tiny heel, and then it turned into 57 on one with the AOP versus the corpse of Bobby Roode. It's just a lot of it's just the size stuff gets weird as you the later you get into Raw, and so I kind of like tune it out. But then when it comes to the women's side of things, you're seeing the same thing. You have the two behemoths, but they kind of got taken care of in that main event, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's go to our first phone call here. We'll go to area code 754. 754, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Harrison from Coconut Creek, Florida.
Hey, good to hear from Coconut Creek, Florida. I think that's the first time. What's on your mind tonight?
I'm just really sick of watching the Baron Corbin show. It doesn't do anything for me.
I think he's good at his role in small doses, but it is kind of deflating how much TV time he's gotten lately. Tonight was, I think, a step back from last week, but at some point, I know they're trying to build up to some sort of babyface comeback, but it Harrison, I think you feel it like a lot of the audience do. It's been a little much.
Yeah, it's just the corrupt general manager thing is not mm-hmm. working for me at this time.
Yeah, so what else is on your mind?
That was really all I had.
He's lulled you into a single negative thought about Raw. too much Baron Corbin.
Yes, but everybody, yeah, you know, I know it's kind of the obligatory go VIP, but your guys' content is second to none. I love all, you know, the round table, especially with yourself and Bruce and Todd at the end of all the pay-per-views. You know, a highlight of the month, and have a good night.
All right. I appreciate the plug, Harrison. PWTorchVIPinfo.com to get information on what being a VIP member is all about, all the perks, all the podcasts, ad-free access to this show, 30-plus years of archives, of back issues of the newsletter, retro radio shows from the 90s, unmatched library of post-pay-per-view roundtables that Harrison mentioned dating back to 2004, and more. All right, up next, 915. Thank you for calling and holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. Izzy from El Paso, Texas.
Izzy, good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
Home
of Beto O'Rourke, right?
Yeah, almost. We almost got it, man. We almost got it. He's actually, I meet for friends. They're friends with him. He lives right down the street from me. And One day, I think president one day, I think he might do it.
Now, come on. There's got to be some scuttlebutt. There's got to be something negative about him you can share for us. You have any breaking news?
He drinks whole milk.
He wore for it when he was in a band. That's probably about it. That's about it. Everything else is pretty good. So
he doesn't like use other people's trash cans on trash day to throw away the stinky stuff. He doesn't like rake his leaves and then they end up on the neighbor's lawn or anything.
If he does, he's pretty secretly like hiding it.
Okay, so. good.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
Yeah, he was quite the
this
story.
This is like a general question. This is like a general question about WWE and professional wrestling in general, not specific to this show tonight, but I was questioning how do you feel about social media, how the entertainers do it, and you know, you see pictures of them, they're hanging out, baby faces and heels hanging out with each other. What do you think about that? Because I remember, like, when I was a kid about 20 years ago, if I would have seen Ravishing Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior hanging out together backstage, that would have freaked me out completely. You know what I mean? So I just general question, how do you feel about that nowadays?
Sure. Yeah, let me ask you a question, Izzy. When that would have freaked you out, did you have in your mind that the fights probably weren't real? Because I think a lot of people think, well, because today people think wrestling's not real, then it doesn't matter. But I didn't think wrestling was real when I was 12, but that still would have kind of changed my perception of things.
I didn't either. Back in the day, I didn't either. When I was like 7, 8, 9 years old, I never thought of it as being real. Yeah. But still, like the stigma of it, the whole show of it, like I just would have been freaked out. And I don't get me wrong, I love it. I follow all the wrestlers, I follow all the entertainers, you know, I love everybody.
Yeah.
But just sometimes I think about it, I'm like, man, if I'd been a little kid and see this, I don't know how I would feel about it, you know?
Well, imagine with all the work they're doing with Baron Corbin, or no, let's do this. With all the work they're doing to get the feud over between Drew McIntyre and Finn Balor, if they posted on social media later tonight a picture of them just sharing a beer together at the bar, I think it would be on people's minds the next time they saw them on Raw trying to convince us that they didn't like each other. And it's weird because, you know, on one level, you know, well, I mean, they might be friends and certainly this is all a show. But pro wrestling just feels like it's in a different zone. And the more the wrestlers and the promotion itself does, to create, to not get in the way of the illusion that the TV show creates, I think the easier it is to get people to react the way that promoters want them to in order to get that crowd heat and draw big crowds and make money. I mean, so I'm with you. Rich, your thoughts on the latest on this. You're on social media more than I am. Do you think WWE and wrestlers in general are getting better about it, worse about it? Are they trying to find their stride in this new frontier?
I think they're getting better with it. I think back to the low nadir that was when I think it was Titus O'Neil posted photos of Braun and Roman in the midst of their feud going to a zoo together and like palling around. Now we have Ronda Rousey using it, I guess, and Becky Lynch using it in a way I think is far more effective because yes. I don't know if you saw Ronda has resorted now to, as many fans said, you know, on a PG environment, using foul language in her tweets to kind of get back at Becky. And that's, you know, as my mom always said, that's usually the sign between that and nowadays with GIFs, the sign that you're losing an argument when you have to resort to those tactics. So I think now it's better. I mean, it could always be better because it's, as with any medium, you know, things happen. But I'll be the person out of the group that when I was 7 or 8, I still thought it was real. And I was also the idiot that was convinced that that stuff in Japan was super real because they just did it different over there. So that was me up into age 12. So I would have been, unlike our caller, completely in the if I saw Rick Rude and Ultimate Warrior together, I would have probably lost my mind. I think for nowadays, for this modern fan, I mean, my son is 6 and he watches with me until his bedtime. So he gets like maybe the first 25 minutes of Raw in. So he was treated to a delightful Baron Corbin and ladies segment. So he, you know, he just likes Roman Reigns. He just likes John Cena. He just likes Brock Lesnar. And I'm sure if he saw all of those guys playing around and doing like ski-doo or something like that, he would be very freaked out. So
less is more. And I'll say this. It's not just about the kids either. Like, it's not about convincing me that it's real. It's about not providing adult fans with evidence that it's not. It's just the absence of unnecessary evidence that what the emotions that you're feeling are all a put on. And it doesn't mean you have to be convinced it's real. Just don't throw in our face when we're scrolling through our feed that the feelings on TV that people have are now, with evidence in front of our face, completely put on. And that's all I say. It's about exclusion. It's not about working people, although Ronda and Becky and company are doing that now and making people wonder a little. And I think that's good. You know, how, is there a line that's being crossed? Austin Aries tried to do that, maybe went too far with the John Morrison, Johnny Impact thing. But I think you can do that effectively. But mostly my issue is with subtraction. It's not putting vacation photos up of Braun smiling next to Roman, you know, within days of you know, I can't remember the exact timeline, but I believe Braun tried to kill Roman in multiple ways.
Yeah, he tried to drop a compactor on him. And it was during the time where Braun smashed stuff. And yes, it was really weird. And I mean, you're right. I mean, they lean right into their demographic as it currently stands when you're quoting Cool Hand Luke to open a promo. And I'm sure if you had anyone in the 18 to 35 demographic, it went, or even 34, it went right over their head, because I don't know how many people know that what we got here is a failure to communicate right off the top of their heads anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Izzy, anything else you want to add to this?
No, pretty much that's about it. And I'm happy to see Dolph Ziggler turn on Drew McIntyre tonight. I was really happy to see about that. And Becky Lynch is the man. She's the best thing going right now. I got my tickets to Royal Rumble. I'm going to be there in January. I'm super excited. I got my Becky Lynch shirt ready to go.
Awesome.
That's about it. So if you need a corresponder for that show, I'm available.
I tell you what, Greg Parks will be hosting the post-Royal Rumble livecast at pwtorchlivecast.com. I don't do the live post shows after pay-per-views because I'm doing the VIP roundtables for our VIP members. That said, it is a live call-in show. And if you email him ahead of time and let him know the number you're calling from, he'll bring you on and you can talk about that on-site correspondent. So if you want to email me, I'll get it over to Greg.
That's great, man. I appreciate it. I enjoy the podcast. I listen to it all the time. And you guys have a great night, okay?
Thanks, Izzy. Absolutely. Appreciate it. All right. We will move next. Actually, let's give the phone number out again here. 347-215-8558. You can push 1 on your keypad when you call to indicate that you want to be on the show. We do have an on-site correspondent waiting or standing by in a few minutes for us, and then we also will get to our mailbag segment later. So send emails to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I had not checked in on the emails yet. I'm going to log in right now. I'm curious what the main topics are of the emails and what the Lucha House Party, Bailey and Sasha, a few that I can't tell from the subject line, and Alexa Bliss and Raw Women. So, okay, some cool topics coming up in a bit later on the program. All right, so more calls here. 217, thank you for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Larry. I'm calling from Beardstown, Illinois. I was wanting to, honestly ask you what good the 3-on-1 match with the Luchas and I think it was Dawson of the Revival did for anybody.
I am not a fan of it, and not that it isn't like in its own little environment kind of fun. It's like, okay, it's mid-card stuff. But I wish they had done, here are a couple things. One, I wish they had done more to make the Revival foils, where fans could delight in seeing them take it, being outmanned by the Lucha House Party. But they didn't really create that backstory other than the Revival, sort of speaking the truth, if you follow their career, which is, we are the artists of tag team wrestling. We revere tag team wrestling. We do it right. We respect it. And I think fans are sort of nodding along, and then the baby faces are making a mockery of it. So I wish they had done more to give us a reason to not cheer Lucha House Party, unless if we're over the age of like 9. And number two, I wish that they – I think that the danger here is you make a mockery of the rules. You have a heel GM in Baron Corbin. You've got a perpetual heel in Stephanie McMahon, and yet they're favoring Lucha House Party against Revival. There's no sense of logic to the structure that would allow Lucha House Party to have this never-ending advantage when Baron Corbin is just calling all the shots to favor heels.
But to me, as a fan, I've been a fan. I'm dating myself here since the days of Buzz Tyler and Bulldog Bob Brown in awesome. Central States Wrestling in the early 80s. And, if somehow Dawson wins it, it makes the Luchas look weaker than weak sauce, and the Luchas 3-on-1 over him means nothing because they took the Revival and they said WWE seems to have done this with several acts and they've come up from NXT hotter than anything and they're just there. And how do you relate to a fan, a casual fan or a hardcore fan, that this is a big deal where you have the three guys in the Lucha House Party beating one guy in a tag team that they're not really pushing as anything other than, well, these guys aren't getting any respect and we're not booking them to get any respect.
Rich, your thoughts on this?
Well, a couple of things. I think Todd Martin of the Torch has mentioned the idea of the war on fans, and there's nothing that is clearer than when you have two wrestlers who have been, as the caller mentioned, nothing but outstanding since their days of NXT, and then you bring them up to the main roster and they're just treated as losers every possible chance you give them. It's very frustrating. And then when you double down on it by having the exact same angle occur within 45 minutes of each other, where a 3-on-2 handicap match occurs, or in this case a 3-on-1, and to put the icing on the cake when it came to this whole segment, the only thing I could think of throughout it was Vince McMahon at some point put on an awkward Cinco de Mayo party and HR got involved because they use Lucha as like a pseudonym for Hispanic, and it's a really weird thing for them to do. I noticed it when Renee did it a couple of weeks ago when she's like, I love a Lucha. I was like, what is a Lucha? You can't say like a luchador, or, and then you had the Revival allude to, you don't understand the language, so let's at least get you to understand the rules. And it's just it's slowly creeping towards awkward lack of knowledge of luchadors and Mexican wrestling, and putting it into a light of just these guys do things, and adding that weird kind of tinge of awkwardness to it. So that's what I got for that.
Larry, anything else you want to add?
I honestly, I turned the program off right afterwards because my thought was, oh, it's going to be one of those nights.
Yeah. Now, did you ever turn off Central States Wrestling in the middle of a program back in the day?
Yes, I did a few times. Yeah. There were some Central States programs. Central States was a pretty conservative wrestling program. I used to make a joke that it made Vern Gagne look like Paul Heyman's ECW from about 1995.
That's funny.
You knew what you were getting when you got Central States. You weren't going to see a whole lot of flips and dives and things like that. You're going to see meat and potatoes, Bulldog Bob Brown, Harley Race, Bruiser Brody. It had its own little charm to it, but gosh, I remember as a fan near the end watching in 87, 88, and oh, it was a really tough watch.
It was nationally syndicated at that point, and Rick Stewart as the announcer with the big glasses and the
he was really good.
Yeah, and he had the mullet going for him, and the Batten twins were kind of the stars. And if you were new to the, if you didn't see, it's kind of like watching latter days Crusher and Baron against the Road Warriors. So like, how can these guys fight against him? Bob Brown at the end, it was like he looked like he couldn't go anymore, but he was still being pushed. And yeah, it was. I hate to say it, but I sometimes cite Central States as like, you know, a territory that might have lasted a little longer than it ought to have for the sake of the fans.
It probably went about 2 years longer than it probably should have, because I remember Crockett came in 86, and they said every guy that seemed to lose on TV and tried to prop them up as, you know, main event guys, and they didn't buy it. It wasn't that they were bad wrestlers. It was just, to me, not that I'm a genius fan or anything like that, you know, they were watching, you know, on cable worldwide wrestling and, you know, world championship wrestling and seeing these guys lose most of the time. You know, you saw Sam Houston lose a lot and Todd Champion and, you know, Mitch Snow and George South and guys like that. And then they'd go over to Central States and try to make them out like they were stars.
Todd Champion, yes.
At the top of the shows. But, no, 87 Central States, the best thing is about the Batten twins were better than people thought. They were just really small, and Rip Rogers was hilarious to watch.
Yep. Those are great memories. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it. Call again, please.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, love to hear from all types of fans, including ones who go back all the way to Central States Wrestling in the 70s and 80s. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to our on-site correspondent. So if we didn't get to your call, please email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Got some good emails in queue, and you can add yours to the stack, but we got to get to our correspondent who is waiting for us. So stay tuned for that, everybody.
Hey, guys, I don't mean to tear you away for more amazing content that Wade Keller is putting out like he does every single week, but I need to tell you about my podcast. It's Sam Roberts, The Last Professional Broadcaster, and every Thursday morning I bring to you Not Sam Wrestling. The biggest names in the world of professional wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling, whether it's WWE superstars like Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Seth Rollins, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, NXT superstars like Shayna Baszler in the Undisputed Era, independent stars like Joey Janela, promoters like Court Bauer. The voices that you want to hear from this world of wrestling are on Not Sam Wrestling. Plus, every week, we break down everything that's going on in this world with the State of Wrestling segment, which Wade Keller has joined me on more than a few times. Hey, you can get the podcast every single Thursday morning. YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, notsam.com, and you can go the extra mile. There's bonus shows, there's videos, and it's all available at patreon.com/notsamwrestling. However you want to get it. It's Not Sam Wrestling. And now, back to our buddy Wade.
All right, we are back with our on-site correspondent, Will, who attended Raw in Houston tonight. Will, welcome to the show. Are you from the city of Houston or just outside of it somewhere?
I'm from League City. It's about maybe 10 minutes away from Houston itself, so it's one of those sprawling metropolitan areas.
Yes, yes. Well, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us. Houston let us down last time, right? and you were you felt bad about it. You felt like the city let us down. You stepped up, and here you are making up for what did not come through in June. Good to have you on the program.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I was all set to go in June, and some personal emergencies came up, so I wasn't able to go. And I do feel like I let you down, so I'm trying to redeem my city for you, Wade.
Now, to make it clear, you did not volunteer to be on the show and no-showed. It wasn't that. I don't want to put heat on you. You just weren't able to volunteer. So, now, what's cool about this is you noted this is your first live WWE show since 2002. So I think that's yep. That's pretty cool too. Are you a lapsed fan at any point who came back, or have you been consistently a viewer on TV, but you just hadn't made it out to a live show for various reasons?
I stopped watching in about 2003 whenever I went off to college, and then whenever Raw 25 came on, I saw commercials for it. I'm like, I'll watch it. And then afterwards, I started watching more and more, and then I got the WWE Network, and then I started listening to you and a whole bunch of other wrestling podcasts.
Has listening to wrestling podcasts made you more likely to be a network subscriber and watch WWE and go back to a live show, even when the podcasts are critical? Like, does it engage you in kind of a different way, even when times aren't as good? Or do you find it more of a substitute or even kind of turning you off from supporting the product? Or is it situational?
To me, it makes me more of an engaged viewer to the WWE Network to sit there and kind of like understand the background and what people are thinking, the psychology and everything else going in there. It makes me want to be more engaged with the product by, having all of those outside podcasts, to listen to help explain the things that I see on the programming.
Cool. Well, you've just described what we've tried to do for decades at the Torch. So thank you for that. Well, cool. Let's get into tonight's show. I got a sense, I'll just ask this first, that Ronda, and it could have been the way the crowd was mic'd or the building. It didn't feel like Ronda Rousey was just like wildly over when she came out at the start of the show. It wasn't like they were dead for her, but describe what it was like in the building for the crowd reaction for Rousey when she first came out, when she was on the big screen, and when she came out for the actual match later.
Whenever she first came out, I'd say it was about a medium excitement level for her. And then as it was going through, it was just completely dead. And then towards the end of the show, whenever she came out again, I'm pretty sure everyone around me, at least, was kind of just ready for the show to end at that point. Cause they knew what was going to be coming up.
So when they're ready for the show to end, does that mean they were tired or they just weren't into the main event? Talk about that energy ebb and flow and what caused it.
They weren't really into the main event. Plus, whenever the Ember Moon was supposed to come out, everyone saw that Tamina and Nia were getting back into the ring, and so they kind of knew what was going to happen. So it didn't really entice for the speculation as to what was going to happen.
Interesting. Were you surprised at the reception for Ronda that it was medium and not intense, or do you think that's more of a Houston thing or has something to do with her promos and her storylines lately?
I think it just has something to do with her promos, because even early on in the at the beginning of the show, it just felt like she was overacting everything, and so yeah. There was a little girl in front of us that had, her home main side for Ronda Rousey. So there's definitely a lot of marks out there for her. But I prefer Becky Lynch being the man more than Ronnie, though. So I'm kind of a little bit personally biased there.
Yeah, yeah. Rich, staying with the women's situation, any follow-up for our correspondent, Will?
Yeah, sure. With the women, Will, since you said this is the first live event on TV, in 16 years, what do you remember from that era of women's wrestling, and what do you feel like has changed for better or worse now?
Honestly, for better is that I have no qualms with letting my 8-year-old daughter watch the women's wrestling versus, 16 years ago in the Attitude Era with the scintillating matches that might happen on the programming there. So. But it's definitely they're allowed to be a character without being attached to a male wrestler. They can be their own. Obviously, Sasha and Bayley, I know we're probably jumping ahead, Sasha and Bayley announcing, basically that we're going to be getting women's tag teams sometime soon.
It's awesome for them to be able to have that out there. So that way, you know, examples for my daughter to be able to watch and enjoy with me.
Ah, that's cool. That's cool. Did you attend the show with her tonight?
No, I attended it with my cousin. So.
Gotcha. Okay. I know you talked about a girl in the crowd, so I was thinking, no, it probably wasn't his daughter, who was a Rousey fan, but I didn't know. Okay. Was there anything about tonight's experience in the building that would that you think parents should be concerned about their kids watching? They've made improvements. Improvements is a word. They've reduced the content that would obviously not be appropriate for kids. But did it seem like it was still a family friendly event overall?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Very friendly. I mean, there was kids all around us. So, everybody was having a great time.
Yeah. What kind of heat did Nia have? Did it seem pretty intense heel heat? Was there any cheering of her? How would you describe the crowd reaction?
It was booze all the way around, and wasn't really heel heat. It was more of a go home heat. But that's kind of cooled down as well.
Yeah. I want to ask how the segment went with Alexa Bliss and Sasha and Bayley. If you can give us any insight into maybe what they didn't show on camera in terms of how fans were, quote, picked to be there, and if the crowd was engaged or groaning or how that went.
I think the crowd was engaged for the most part. I'm pretty sure it was not necessarily spontaneous fans that were coming up to ask questions. But everybody was going along. They were having a great time with it. So,
Did you sense that Bayley and Sasha were pretty over with this crowd?
Absolutely, yeah.
But more than Ronda?
Honestly, I'd say it would be about the same for both of them.
Wow, okay.
You know, because, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about Drew McIntyre. What kind of, vibe did he give off to you and to the crowd in general did you sense in terms of this is a big star and one of the big reasons you paid to be here? Did he have that kind of gravitas, I guess it would be the right word, in the way that he was presented and how much time that he had out there?
I didn't know it was Drew McIntyre Appreciation Night until they flashed it up on the screen.
Yeah.
I don't know how many other people did, but I thought it was he definitely earned his paycheck tonight. He very well put together out there, and there was a smattering of boos and cheers for him as well. Obviously, whenever he got his gold medal of Raw, that was a mix of things. But even during the match, he was definitely playing up to the crowd, and everybody was eating it up. So I enjoyed seeing him. A lot of other people did, and we both cheered and booed him as well. So he played his character very well.
Did he seem like he would be a star in any era, the way that he's carrying himself and being presented? Or does he seem like the best of a stripped-down roster with Roman in there and no Braun and a roster split in general? Like, how did he come across in that sense?
With my limited experience from the previous era, I would almost peg it where he was in the Triple H, Randy Orton, Batista kind of, I'm better than everyone else is, and I'm here back to dominate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where he's definitely giving off that air of confidence. So.
But he seemed like a valid star to be holding that spot.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, yep.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Go ahead, Rich. What do you have for us, Will?
Well, thinking back to the last time you've been there, you know, like you said, 16 years. What did you notice that was with the production, things that might have been on the screen that we might not have seen at home? What was the best part of the experience for you being there for the 3 hours or however long you were there?
So I got there about an hour before the show actually even started, and I stayed through the dark match. It was, to me, I'm one of those guys that likes to sit there and watch every single special that the WWE has about the backstage stuff. And it was interesting to me that they actually changed out the ring mat like 3 or 4 times whenever they went dark. And then the production value just in general with how well oiled their ring crew is. And then obviously I think it's been said before with everyone coming in and talking about how loud it is for whenever they hit the mats, and it's mic'd up along with the bell and everything else. But I thoroughly enjoyed it because I was also was able to start some chants and get noticed by the wrestlers in the ring. It was that small of a, or not small, but there were some quiet parts where I was able to do that. So
now, were you the one chanting one more time after Dean DDT'd Seth in the ring? Dirty Deedson?
Given no, but I might have contributed to that as well. So.
You didn't start it, but you contributed. What was the reaction to Dean Ambrose?
Yeah.
Was he the biggest star of the night in terms of crowd response? Where does he rank compared to some of the other contenders in there, like Rousey and Drew and Seth, babyfaces or heels alike?
So I think number one pop of the night was Seth, and everybody was kind of anticipating because of where the cameraman was set up that Seth was going to make the run in where he did. But it was definitely everyone was excited to see him. There was there was about a 50-50 mix, or a 50% of the people there were wearing something with Dean Ambrose and pop whenever the guys in the gas mask came out. But Seth definitely got the biggest pop of the night. Dean got a mix of heels and boos and cheers as well.
Where ranked like the top babyface reactions and then the top heel reactions? If Seth was number one, where is Balor? And how did that compare to Rousey? Some of the smaller players, were you surprised by any of the ones who weren't quite main eventers in terms of the crowd response that they got?
So Balor was definitely number two whenever he came out. And then I'd say probably Ronda and Natalya were down there. And Apollo Crews coming out, he got a little bit of a pop as well. And I guess Dolph coming as a babyface, possibly. He got a little bit of a nod as well.
I didn't sense, Will, that Dolph got, like, on his comebacks, that the crowd was going crazy for his comebacks or anything. I felt like they were holding out judgment a little bit in terms of embracing him. Not sure if this was more a dispute with Drew or a real change for him that they were embracing. What was the ebb and flow of the crowd's emotions towards Ziggler?
So during the match, it was pretty much exclusively "Let's go Ziggler" chants. And then with the dark match afterwards, I don't know if you want me to go into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, you know, so the dark match was originally supposed to be between Elias and Baron Corbin. And then, of course, you know, Elias comes out, starts whooping up on Corbin. And then Corbin, you know, is able to successfully fend off, grabs the mic and said, "Oh, hey, it's now a 3-on-1 handicap, no disqualification match. Guys, get out here." And then Lashley and Drew came out, started beating down on Elias. And then Finn's music hit. And Dolph comes out as well, and he got a big pop for him as well down there. So, yeah, I guess Drew or Dolph Ziggler is starting to turn babyface.
We've been talking about the babyface depth on Raw and how shallow it is, where with Braun injured, you've got Seth and then Balor number two, Elias number three, and Apollo Crews number four. Ziggler is a relief pitcher out of the bullpen in that sense, and they just need bodies on the babyface side that fans care about, and there's not anyone else who jumps out who's ready to be elevated, who's on the Raw roster, unless Bray Wyatt made his return as a babyface So, yeah, I think it was much, much needed. How did that dark match end? How long did it go, and any highlights, and what was finished?
It was 5 minutes, and the baby faces won. They were able to pull it out, and Elias pinned, Corbin got pinned by Finn.
That's a crowd-pleasing moment. All right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Rich, what else have you got?
Are you going to ask the ticket question?
Well, I'll save that for the end.
Okay.
That's the grand finale. That's what everybody stays tuned for. We should go to a commercial break before we find out what people paid for their ticket.
It's like one of those reality TV shows. Like, when we come back, you're going to find out.
let me throw this in. How did the crowd react to Lucha House Party and the whole bit with the Revival?
There was especially a lot of the little kids. They really reacted to the Lucha House Party. And then a lot of the older guys that I noticed around me, at least, were reacting more to the Revival. But everybody had was laughing at it and having a good time, especially whenever, of course, it was announced that it was Lucha House Rules that they'd be playing by. And so it turned into a 3-on-1 handicap. But I don't know. Maybe it was just me, but I didn't seem to notice. Once the match finally started, the crowd just kind of died afterwards.
Okay. And how about Slater and Rhino? It didn't last very long, but did the crowd seem to be into that story at all or feel bad for Rhino? Or what was the mood in the room?
He got a pretty good standing ovation for Rhino. And then, of course, during the backstage segment, everybody started shouting out, "Hey, he's got kids," because they could see where he's going.
Yeah.
And then whenever he comes out, you know, it's, "Hey, he's got kids," and gore, gore, gore. But ECW chant got thrown around a little bit too. They were in it for what it was in, what we were in for. So.
Yeah, I can't imagine a time that Rhino wrestles and he doesn't get an ECW chant, which is I don't have him on my top 10 list of like ECW icons, like, you know, if you just in terms of all of ECW or original ECW history, but he is iconic because he's held on and he's been relevant enough to be out there in the indie scene and then also here in the modern day WWE. So I'm curious what's next for him. So did you get there in time to see anything before Ron went on the air?
Yes, they had WWE Main Event come on.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to spoil the ending for that.
Main Event fans, fast forward a minute. Go ahead.
It was, it was Curt Hawkins versus, not Fandango. What's the other guy? Tyler Breeze.
Tyler Breeze, yeah.
And, Tyler Breeze. And he's up. Now Curt Hawkins is 0-235, I think. And then there was a 6-man tag of Mojo with Ascension versus Zack Ryder and the B team, and the B team won. So,
all right. I think that ended Tyler Breeze's losing streak then at like 106 because he's been bummed out lately with what's going on with him. Rich, anything else you want to ask about anything before we get to the closing questions?
No, I think I'm good.
I do want to ask how full the building was tonight. If you can describe, what sections were filled and if you have an estimate.
Absolutely. So it's three levels. It fills 18,000 total. I'd say with the tarped off parts, all of the top deck was tarped off. And then really interesting to me was the hard camera side. There was maybe 100 people out of, like a couple thousand seats that were on that side.
Wow.
Other than that, I'd say it was probably about 60% full. I think they pushed a lot of people to the other side. And there was even a whole row on the floor level that wasn't even filled.
Wow.
So,
well, you have been rewarded with the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view next February. Did they announce that in the building tonight?
They did, and they even put on the pre-sale code. So I'm trying to convince my cousin and some other guys to go with me. So
what did they say the pre-sale was? Or do you not want to give that away?
Just being able to, you buy a ticket, quote unquote ticket. That might be something interesting to people. I don't know. figure that out.
So. Tickets. I think it's plural. I think the password is tickets. But don't tell anyone. Yeah, so it's coming up February 17th. I think it's like James Caldwell emailed me and said that it's like $500 for a pair of ringside tickets. So,
yeah.
It's
yeah, $500, and where I was sitting at would be $200.
No, they're five. Actually, they're five. He said two floor tickets are $500 each. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the good transition here. It worked brilliantly. What did you pay for your tickets tonight? And are you happy with the value you got for your money for where you sat?
I paid $65 each for my tickets, and I was opposite the hard camera, about 20 rows up. I was happy with what it was, and I always love going to live sporting events because I get to heckle everybody. So, yeah, I had a great time, and being my first event in a long time, it was a lot of fun. So,
Cool. I just saw James's email, too. It's $75 per ticket for the convenience fee. So $575 per ticket for row three if you were to sit row three. It's amazing. So. Will, anything else that you made note of, mental note or otherwise, that you want to share with us from tonight's experience?
No, it was just a great time, and I mean, it's one of those things: suspend your disbelief, cheer for the baby faces, boo for the heels, unless you want to be counterculture, and just enjoy it and have a great time. So.
Excellent. Will, thank you so much. Appreciate your stepping up and representing Houston very well tonight.
Thanks a lot, Wade. Have a good night.
You bet.
Thank you, Rich.
Take care, Will.
All right, we are back. Rich Fan is my co-host today, and we're going to get to some mailbag questions momentarily. But Rich, tell people how they can hear more from you and also plug your social media.
Oh, gosh. Well, yes. Like Wade said, I do use social media sometimes to my wife's chagrin too much. You can find me on Twitter at @Rich_FANN. And here at The Torch, I do a couple of things. One's a very proud thing. I've been a part of the East Coast Cast, which is on Wednesdays. I do the VIP portion of the show, as Travis mentions, my host. It's not minivan friendly. Typically, it's anything from pro wrestling, politics, movies, anime, comic books, history. God, I think one of the first episodes I did with Travis 3 years ago, we were talking about witches and the existence of magic in the world and Lord knows what else. So it's kind of like Outer Limits plus pro wrestling. So if you're interested in that, you can go to East Coast Cast or East Coast Cast on Twitter. But my latest and greatest project has to be in the last year and a half, the Deep Dive, which is a PW Torch live cast Saturday program. Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, I spend an hour or more, depending on the guest, jumping into with both feet a subject. And usually it's a fun time because we can go serious, talking about the civil rights leader and historian, such as Big Cat Ernie Ladd and his role in the AFL and pro wrestling, or we could talk about the Marine Six and how Shawn Michaels somehow can't run without looking like he just fell off a horse. So it's been a fun experience doing those shows. And I also contribute from time to time with Radican Worldwide with Sean Radican. And I think that is it. This weekend, I'm going to have Zach Haydorn on the canvas, and we're going to be discussing wrestling entrances and tearing them apart as only Zach can.
Awesome. That's great. All right. Definitely looking forward to that. Anything else? I don't want to jump in and cut you off.
No, I think that's it.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Let's go to the mailbag. And by the way, if you're watching SmackDown Live tomorrow and you want to join us, tune in at WadeKellerPodcast.com or WadeKellerPostShow.com. I think they actually, let me check here. I think they both go to the same the same studio page. I'm checking. I got to make sure I'm plugging things correctly here. Yeah. So WadeKellerPostShow.com or WadeKellerPodcast.com will get you to our live stream. So if you most of you download the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever, you're welcome to join us live, and you can just listen in at that page, or of course you're welcome to join our callers and participate in the show. If you watch SmackDown Live but can't stream the show live but want to participate, by email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com is the email address. And then on our Blue Brand on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast later this week, Todd Martin will be co-host about once every 3 weeks. He is the co-host of the Thursday flagship, so we'll be covering the latest topics, Raw, SmackDown, and otherwise. We cover the whole range on the flagship, and Todd does the VIP audio show, The Fix, with Todd Martin. We spend usually 2 to 3 hours every Wednesday talking about a wide range of topics, the latest from Japan, MMA, the Indies, the All Elite Rumblings, ROH, NXT, and on, and a really fun mailbag segment, too, with great questions from our VIP members. So we invite you to go VIP and check that out, but you can get a sense of what Todd brings on the flagship this week, and that's on our Blue Brand. You have to search Wade Keller and subscribe to the blue logo. Don't miss out on those, folks. If you're listening to our post shows, you're missing out on a lot by not hearing the Blue Logo show. So however you stumbled upon us, just understand we have two feeds, and there are two pairs of shows each week, sometimes three on the Blue Brand, and we invite you to subscribe to both. All right, first up on the email is Elijah from Talbot, Tennessee. What will it take to make Sasha and Bayley relevant again? Charlotte versus Sasha is what got me back into wrestling after 15 years away. I hate seeing Sasha squandered. Rich, was tonight a step in the right direction or not?
I think it was a step. I don't know if it's in the right direction or not, because yes, of the four horsewomen, the WWE edition, I've likened, especially now that Becky has become the man, Sasha and Bayley have somehow shared the Paul Roma role. And I don't know how you recover from that.
Yeah. The idea that we're watching a segment where they're still playing off of tension between them, or people are trying to break them up, or they're trying to assure people that they're a team. It's like people who didn't watch for 4 months and then tune back in, like, what? Like, they're still doing this? And they took a break for, it feels like, maybe a month or so, and now it's just like back to, and not that they're actually playing it up in a big way, but it's being referenced and you're seeing them together. And I think that storyline was so damaging with them because it went on for so long and made them both look so bad. I think they were damaged by that. The idea of wanting to be the first women's tag team champions, I thought was an interesting statement by them. The first overt acknowledgement by WWE that might be in the cards. And then, yeah, the announcers reacting to it with Corey Graves saying, you know, you can't win a championship that doesn't exist. And then he said he wants to be president of Connecticut, I think it was, Rich, do you remember?
Yeah.
And then Michael Cole said that Bob Backlund might have been the previous one. So, yeah, I don't know that Bayley and Sasha playing off each other is – I mean, if they become a top tag team in a way, that's fine because it's keeping them out of the singles category until they're really ready to do something with them. But I think they need to build them up and make them strong as a team and individually, because eventually – they're going to need them. What maybe needs overstating it. They are too valuable to not take full advantage of as eventual opponents for the current top crew. And I think people are going to be interested in seeing Sasha and Bayley if they don't diminish them more in coming months. They're going to be interested to see them against Ronda Rousey, Nia Jax, Becky Lynch, Charlotte, however the face heel stuff aligns, and Asuka. But they need to make sure that Sasha and Bayley feel like big stars and that they're protected and framed that way in the meantime. And I just don't think 2018 serviced them well in that regard.
No, I mean, I've talked with Travis on the East Coast cast a lot about not necessarily fantasy booking, but just looking at the MMA four horsewomen and the WWE/NXT four horsewomen. And when it shakes out, right now, to me, Bayley and Sasha, unfortunately, are the two I would have Shayna Baszler wreck, for lack of a better word. Like, they would be the two people. It's not going to be Charlotte. It's not going to be Becky. It's going to be most likely Bayley, sadly enough. And then Charlotte comes to her. I'm sorry. Sasha comes to her aid, and then she catches it too.
Yeah.
And it kind of hit home for me last week while I was listening to you, and I think it was Cam or was it Travis that was on last Monday for the post show, But I wound up watching Edge and Christian's show, and it reminded me that that show being back is just another thing that gave you this version of someone, kind of like the email or caller earlier who mentioned the social media. To me, it was more damaging to Bailey to have her showing how hardcore she could be, whacking Tommy Dreamer in the groin with a kendo stick, and then a month later not being able to do the very same thing to her opponent to win the title. So they need to figure that out. And I'm hopeful, like you said, with a tag title reign, and hopefully no one turns on the other and they can have an amicable departure. That would be great to build the two of them up. But until then, I'm reserving all rights to just see those two as cannon fodder for Shayna Baszler. Long may she reign.
Yes, yes. All right. Mika and Alicia Current from Cincinnati, Ohio, emailed and said, Wade, welcome to the first ever all-women's Monday Night Raw, or at least it felt that way for the first 30 minutes. When did Bobby Lashley turn into the 2018 version of Ahmed Johnson? The red and black trunks made me think it was the mid-90s again. And Wade, why has Raw been so lame as of late? It's sad. You think with all the money WWE makes, they would care more about their product. It's clear they don't. Anyway, thanks for the shows and all. Thanks for the great feed. I'm getting this all wrong. Anyways, I got to slow down. Anyway, thanks for the feedback and all the great wrestling podcasts. Well, and they say, you're the man. Well, thank you, but I'll concede that to Becky. Rich, I said this on the Keller Hotline for VIP members last Friday. Looking at the Raw ratings, you know, was it 10 weeks or something? I can't remember the exact number that they've been under 1.8 in the ratings. And there just comes a point where it's like, maybe just do a better show. Like, maybe take more pride in the quality of the product. And it sounds like weird to say that, but I really do think that there's a certain complacency that they're not even aware of in terms of the quality of the writing. And I think it's a product of Vince McMahon and what he thinks is and isn't important, and the inertia of the writing team and a comfort zone that they're in because of the pending TV deals or the upcoming big boost in TV rights fees and the kind of locked in to a degree network subscribership and then the Saudi Arabia deal, which certainly is now shaken up a little bit with, it seems like, daily headlines that make it seem less palatable for them to continue on that course. But that's a topic for a little bit down the line. So I just think it sounds like so obvious and almost too generic, but it needs to be said. Just make Raw a better show and make SmackDown a better show consistently. That's why Raw's been lame, because they're not trying hard enough at the things that they should be trying hard to do better. I thought this week's show was an improvement, but as PW Torch hit and misses author, Raw hit and miss author John Mazzara said on Twitter, that this week's show is going to be better than last week's show, minus Seth and Ziggler. Like, there's nowhere to go but up. And I thought they did go up this week. I what did you think, Rich?
I think they did, but I also think, much like what you and Bruce mentioned this weekend on VIP, you can't get credit for trying. You can't demand credit for it either. You know, don't confuse effort with results was something one of the old Bills coaches put up on the wall before he got fired. And that's kind of what they're doing right now. They're like, we tried. We have 20 writers. We really are trying to make jokes that are relevant to a 70-plus-year-old man. And like the emailer wrote, I didn't think about it until she mentioned it, but yeah, they really are turning the almighty Bobby Lashley into Ahmed Johnson 2018, and that's kind of sad.
It seems like Vince is always looking for the muscular black guy to play a very similar role. I mean, can you rattle off the list, Rich, from Ahmed until Bobby, who have played that, and even Apollo Crews is sort of in that boat. But, I mean, it's a pretty long list.
Yeah, you got Ahmed John. Well, even before Ahmed, remember, Ahmed needed to be played off of Farouk.
Yeah.
And then, or Sama Sima, if you want to go back a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was thinking Tony Atlas.
Good Lord. Like, yeah, so you got those guys. Then you move a little bit ahead. You had Bobby version one. You had Ezekiel Jackson.
Yeah.
You had, let's see, how am I missing a black guy? I'm going to be ashamed. Next meeting, I'm going to get kicked out.
I threw it at you because I figured it'd be easier.
I mean,
hope
Big
that's...
E, the version.
Yeah,
version,
really, Big
like,
E, yeah.
One of Big E when he used to say, I got till five when he was in NXT. Then they made him Silent Mr. Hughes version like six. Obviously, Mark Henry, though the Hall of Fame Mark Henry, I think, really transcended that role. Silverback was probably the most purest Vince McMahon version of that trope.
He's a silverback. Look at him. Yeah. And everyone's like, do we say anything?
Well, kind of much like Renee tonight, where everyone's like, hey, Dean is literally murdering people in the streets. Don't ask me about my marriage.
Right. But then she got offended by something later that was much more minor. I can't remember what it was, something super just silly. And she's like, this is outrageous. And I'm just like, really, Renee? Like, I want to look up what it was that she was outraged at, like a segment or two later. And I'm just thinking to myself, this is why they shouldn't be going to Renee on this. And, you know, telling Corey Graves to mind his own business, I thought was pretty forceful.
It's like, this is my marriage. Respect my privacy. As we watch invasive surgery footage of literally any wrestler who's ever been hurt ever.
Yes. Yep. Renee said that. So Corbin making Heath Slater into referee. That's when Renee said, Corbin makes me sick. And I'm like, he just gave like a job to someone who might keep a job for a very long time. You know, like he might be better pay relative to the matches, number of matches he's working. I mean, I know it's against his will and he'd rather be a wrestler, but like that made her sick. But what Dean has said and done on this very show, she's just staying silent on. I mean,
husband shows up with a riot. They couldn't say a riot squad, which is great for me because, as you always mention, when I screw up the pronouns during some of these shows, it's like you can't say riot squad. We already have a riot squad. They have two T's.
That's funny.
They have an opportunity to prevent riots. I don't know whatever they're going to figure out what they're going to call Dean's mass crew, but they essentially turned him into Marty Scurll and Bane. But only in the Dollar General version of both of those people. So I don't know how that helps him, but it does give him a really cool air raid siren to his theme.
I did like that.
And so
those freak me out. I feel like I'm 8 years old in a nasty thunderstorm when I hear those things. I get a little uptight.
I usually get freaked out because I saw the movie, years ago. I was in high school and it messed with me. Silent Hill, which was a video game for the PlayStation about this town that kind of time forgot and demons and all these things infested it. But it's based off a real town that was near us in central Pennsylvania called Centralia, which has had 150 years worth of coal burning under the town. There's only like three people that live there now because most people have either died off or left because the city itself or the town itself is basically imploding under this never-ending fire. Ugh. Underneath. Yeah.
But enough about Monday Night Raw.
Burn it down.
All right. Let's see. Oh, and it did feel like a lot of, and it's been like this lately, and I feel sort of bad talking about Raw being so bad when there's so much female content, so many female wrestlers, but there was a lot this week. I didn't think, you know, anything they did with the women was especially great or especially awful this week, but where would they be without them right now? I mean, when you think about the TV time being dedicated and the number of segments, promos and in ring and backstage, what, I mean, I guess they would have had Bray back by now or B-Team would be involved in a program. Poor Rhino would still have a job. You know, he's probably a victim of this. No Way Jose would be getting a more serious push. I mean, but there's not a lot of depth on Raw. I mean, you'd be scraping the lower card in order to fill 3 hours. So I think, you know, the women are getting a lot of time and they're earning it.
And it's not in the, as our correspondent mentioned, the Attitude Era method of, we're going to have a jingle all the way jello match between X and Y. It's grand opening as far as the opening of the show to the closing of the show. While, as you mentioned astutely, there may be some issues with writing and just the tone. They're being treated equal,
yeah.
And which sounds dumb. It's like their storylines equally suck, but at least they have the Bechdel test being passed and they're talking to each other instead of talking about a man.
Let's go to Zach in Texas. I don't think this new role is going to work for Alexa Bliss. Is she heel or a face? I can't tell. I just know she's not Spider-Man's uncle like she thought she was momentarily. What was the point of the whole open form redo? The best promo of the night came from Becky Lynch on Twitter before the show started when she tweeted at Ronda Rousey. Unfortunately, Ronda made the fool mistake of responding to Becky, at which point the man promptly shut her down. At least Ronda had a good tag match at the end. Yeah, a couple things here. You can talk about Alexa Rich, and then also, is Becky too good on social media to the point... It was almost like John Cena and The Rock, where you're like, oh man, Cena might be scoring too many points, you know, with Rock. And what's Rock going to do? Say, please be nicer, you know, because Rock prides himself, obviously, on hey, bring it on, I'm going to be fine. And obviously, he's gone on to be fine. But like, I almost feel like somebody's got to step in for Ronda and maybe help her a little bit. How has that social media battle been? And if you're in WWE and you know how much they're spending on Ronda, do you try to pilot this social media back and forth with Becky a little bit, or do you just say, let her fend for herself? It'll sharpen the knife.
I think you let her sharpen the knife, because this is akin to, and this goes back to what you were talking about with the social media earlier when we had the caller. This is the best to me because it reminds me of UFC or boxing. So I don't have to put my pro wrestling fan hat on. It's just two people who don't like each other and want to fight at some point. And in the interim, you don't have to worry about, you know, crazy with the trope of the weigh-in shove or anything like that. You just have to deal with the fact that Ronda isn't especially good on her feet. She reminds me of George Costanza when he had the jerk store line, and then the guy responded back and he had nothing. So he was just seething. And she feels like she's like workshopped it with her husband like 57 times. Millennial man. She's a do nothing. I got it. And then Becky goes from a completely different angle, and it just destroys whatever mindset she went in. I mean, even today when she was talking about, I'm going to go take care of the business, you couldn't. It's like, okay, great. And you're saying you got a paid vacation by doctor. I don't know about you, but if a doctor tells me I can't do my job,
yeah,
I'm not going to try to do my job.
Yeah, I don't think fans are buying the idea that Becky's taking advantage of or relieved that she's being held back at all.
Yeah. Ronda sounds like my old high school football coach right now yelling at a kid who has a concussion saying he's faking it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Alexa Bliss, do you think she's going to be effective in her role?
Oh, absolutely. I think she has just enough snark, and she's just enough in terms of confidence and her size issues that which may have plagued her a bit when she first got up to the main roster, they kind of feed into the role a little bit, and not in a more of a negative. It's more of a, she's got the power. She goes around, she's using it. Now, yes, they have to stop writing her with silly. They knew the Marvel, Miss Marvel trailer was going to be released, so they went heavy with the Marvel lingo again, and that just isn't helpful for them, because much like Ronda, they don't know the subject with which they're talking. Mm-hmm. And so it just comes off as, you know, I always liken it to when they had Steve Buscemi on Community, and he's like, hi, fellow kids. And he's got the skateboard, and it's just not good. And so the more they can avoid those moments, yeah, the less you can jar people's realities and make Alexa a marketable GM. Though, as everyone has mentioned, I would love for a day where you don't have the heel authority figure or any authority figure on television. Unless it's William Regal.
Do you think the direction they're headed is Alexa Bliss eventually turning babyface on Corbin and becoming the sole babyface authority figure of Raw, and eventually having an issue with Stephanie, you know, which I'm not voting for that Stephanie aspect of it, but it does seem like that might be the way it would go.
I think so, and I think that kind of is a microcosm of, or not a microcosm, it's similar to the storyline with Drew and Dolph, and that Baron won't see until it's too late that the machinations Alexa had put in motion behind him really weren't to help him. It was to help herself. And, you know, anyone who watches Game of Thrones or Mad Men or any one of those great episodic television shows can appreciate seeing the anvil over the antagonist's head. And you're just waiting for that episode where it finally falls and they get there. So I don't mind that. But yes, I would be very careful with the Stephanie part, because other than Ronda, I haven't seen anyone else get over or at least be seen as equal to her. So I would, much like with Elias, it might become the Stephanie exception where she likes this person and therefore they can keep their role.
Do you think Baron Corbin's going to go the way of Brad Maddox when the GM gig is over? Or do you think they're putting him in this spot in part because they're big fans of his look and his mic work and his charisma, or whatever. Whatever Vince sees in him, his side, and that this is actually just giving him valuable TV time so he can be a bigger star when this run is over.
Honestly, Wade, I thought this was something akin to when The Rock wore his silk shirts for like 6 months after he got pec surgery, and I thought he was going to show up at some point by the end of this year, and he had done something cosmetic to either his from his extreme weight loss, either to his stomach area or something, or maybe get hair plugs or something. But once he shaved the head, I'm in that boat. I think this is something where they've given him an opportunity. They believe in him. Though I've joked several times with Travis, even though he doesn't know who the wrestler is, so I get very annoyed. he's got another version of himself in NXT now, so he has to be very careful that if he doesn't advance, and by that I mean Punishment Martinez, is basically better Baron Corbin, as I labeled him when he was in Ring of Honor. And so he has to get better, because if he doesn't get better, Martinez is just nipping at his heels.
Good point. All right. Cesar and G in Los Angeles says, WWE continues to treat the audience like we're stupid. We just saw that Drake Maverick and Bobby Roode were the legal competitors. This match should have been ended in a countout since Maverick spent minutes outside of the ring. Then when AOP came in, they never left the ring. Shouldn't they have been disqualified for not beating a five count? I mean, I am, as Corey Graves said, I'm a stickler for rules. I'm with Corey on that. I think that having that kind of structure is important because it makes bending them and breaking them more effective. If you don't treat rules seriously and as being an important guardrail to chaos and the structure that's necessary to find out who's the best, then it's just so much more difficult to get heat and tell effective stories when people stray from them or break through the barriers. And so I like decisions being announced when there's chaos and all that. That said, this is Baron Corbin flexing his unchecked authority irresponsibly. And so to me, I like, once Corbin just changes the rules of the match, I sort of think, well, I don't really expect the rules to be followed. So I'm less bothered by that than I am when there's just a regular referee in a one-on-one or two-on-two match, and then there's some chaos and they just bother not to announce a finish. Rich.
Yeah, I think because of the fact that he's taken the least fun parts of Mr. McMahon when he was randomly grabbing the mic and saying, remind people this is no DQ, remind people. Like, I enjoyed those parts of him being a heel and doing those things as the authority figure, because he was getting the crap kicked out of him, or his charge if it was corporate Mankind or whomever was losing, and you could clearly see this guy just is so hell bent on not letting Austin win. In the case of Corbin, I don't see what it is. It's just, we show up weekly to watch this guy piss everyone off, but we don't remember why. So with AOP, sure, the rule should have been a count out. They were out, like the emailer said, they were out for so long, but it was lost in the fact that they had to show that this guy's never going to play fair or let anyone else play fair. And that got a little frustrating. So if I'm a ref, I would have done the count out and asked him to fire me for making the just call.
All right. Let's grab another email here. And this is Jarrett, who says, I'm watching Raw a little bit late tonight, and I'm thinking of why I struggle to stay interested in Raw, but not SmackDown. And I think the big reason is why the authority figures on Raw seem to be the center of the spotlight, specifically because Corbin and Alexa have to stay relevant because they are active wrestlers, whereas on SmackDown, Shane McMahon and Paige do not, minus the blunder of Shane becoming the best in the world. Stupid, I know, LOL. looking for your thoughts. I mean, it is, you know, Paige is, she's a babyface authority figure who makes appearances, but the show isn't about her. She doesn't deliver news on all the matches. It is scaled back. I think you could scale it back a little more and hit a sweet spot. But Rich, is that one of the big differences between the two shows?
And for the most part, Paige actually gets to legislate to the men as well, which isn't lost on me. When Shane isn't around, she can kind of just handle business. With Raw, it's very clearly delineated. The girls go see mom, boys go see dad. Another shall the twain meet. And, you know, the extra hour, that extra hour does so much. We've talked about it ad nauseum, and I know Jason Australia would mention it a lot as far as like the economical benefit vis-a-vis NXT. But now that they're making so much money and they're doing so much, yeah, it's just, I'll be honest. If I wasn't covering it, I usually just skip the first hour of Raw. And if there's something of importance, I assume Cam or one of my other friends are going to send me a text and say, find this video, because there's only so many hours of the day, and I don't want to be frustrated for more than I have to.
We got an email from Raymond who said, I want Lucha House Party to go away and never appear on my television again. That is all, Raymond from Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
Now, what are they... The idea that Lucha Libre wrestlers appearing in masks have to be treated like mascots hired for a kid's birthday party is getting a little old. I mean, and I know this is a company that did good things with Rey Mysterio, but is this, I mean, besides the rules being thrown out, they're not put in a position where you watch them wrestle and think it's anything more than the halftime act. There's nothing about them that says, hey, maybe they'll be contenders someday to something. And I think fans are less invested when they're being entertained with superfluous fluff than they are when they think wrestlers in the ring are fighting to move up the card towards championships or settle feuds. And so I think it diminishes what they could be. It isn't in Vince McMahon's DNA to promote luchadors in an effective way. He tried back in the Monday Night War era when WCW was tearing it up with some lucha stars, and he brought them in from the other group, and nobody caught fire, and he didn't have his heart in it, and they were treated as a separate category, and he just didn't get it. And he still doesn't get it. So, I mean, I get where Raymond's coming from on a number of factors. What do you think of Lucha House Party as a gimmick, and is there a way to tweak it or frame it differently where it could actually work at a level that fits in the ecosystem of relevance on Raw and SmackDown?
I think it could work. And when I think about it, groups like LAX and Impact or the Lucha Brothers everywhere in the independent scene, there's a way to do this and it looks good and everyone knows that these gentlemen are respected. As I mentioned during our call-in portion, it just seems very weird to me that it's set up as this, like you said, kind of racial dress up right now, because Vince doesn't understand luchadors, where you can say, I like a lucha. Like, what the heck is that? And because of that, you're just putting these people out as like this exoticism, this look at these foreign things that we don't really know or care about, but we think they're cool, and we're just going to have them here off to the side. Because like you mentioned a few weeks ago on the Monday Night Report, they're essentially here because they're the least protected members of 205 Live that you can put on television on non-205 Live shows and not hurt 205 Live.
All right, another going back to the Alexa Bliss segment here, I want to get a couple last emails in. Dave from Holyoke, Massachusetts. Did I say that right, Rich? Is it Holyoke?
Holyoke,
okay. Yeah. What did I just learn how to pronounce? Oh, Daya cheese is Daya cheese. I didn't realize that. People have been saying it wrong. I almost did a quick flip during Raw, but when Alexa Bliss came out, I left it on, as I'm a big women's wrestling fan. However, I thought it was a terrible segment. My wife, who's usually intrigued, was bored. I felt Alexa wasn't convincing, and the questions were bland, and the answers were bland. Thankfully, it ended when it did, but then they went to a commercial during the start of the match, which tells you how they feel about the women. Actually, they do that for everybody, I think. But was the segment as bad as I thought? Also, I'm a huge Bayley and Sasha fan. Is this their limit? Do you see them becoming anything more before Mania? So we kind of cover the Sasha-Bayley thing, and I have high hopes for Alexa, too. But this feedback is indicative of a feeling that I had early in Raw, which is, really, we're doing this again, and we're just turning Raw into a talk show. You know, like, I feel like we're, you know, Alexa going, I'm going to make my mark by having the fans get to know Sasha and Bayley better. It doesn't feel like it keeps the momentum of the show going. And I think to do a segment like that, an extended sit-down fan Q&A segment where you're pretending something's real that's not, and I know it sounds weird on a pro wrestling show to object to that, but there's something about the pretense. If we're going to let fans ask questions and you know their plants, that oddly, and it's only pro wrestling fans would get this, is sort of irritating, even though everything else is also a false pretense. So you have all that working against it, and I don't think people feel they don't know Bayley and Sasha very well. They're very accessible. We're not wondering what they're like. This Lars Sullivan, maybe. you know, we could, okay, that might be kind of interesting. Let's learn about this guy. So it sort of felt like a segment without a purpose that was just slowing down the momentum of the show.
It seems to me that somebody was reviewing the tape they have, because, you know, obviously they tape everything, of Access. Because this felt like when Cam and I were at Access, and they would do the exact same thing with real fans. Not real, non-planted fans. And you'd get these really great, really insightful answers from everyone, from the Bellas to Baron Corbin to Alexa Bliss. And I think someone saw that and said, hey, maybe we can do that out here and help get people over. Because if the Baron Corbin that showed up that did that Q&A showed up on Raw every week, I think we'd be getting far different reactions from both the fans that wrote and called it.
I think that's well put. All right, let's do at least one more here. Paul L. from Ridge, New York. I know I mentioned this last week, but the Lucha House Party is still bugging me. So now it got to be 3-on-1 in their faces. At least Renee had a good point. Someone is letting them get away with this. So show the Revival complaining to Corbin about it or something like that. Or can they demand that all their matches be under Revival rules? Make it a normal tag match. I almost want to turn off during Lucha House Party matches, but I felt like, but I like Revival enough that I keep watching. So, yeah, just more venting about that segment. What is the end game with that? Rich, what do you think?
I think they're trying to make another New Day, where you have a group that you can kind of have fun with and everyone's happy because the Lucha House Party's here. And Renee, as we mentioned before, can't be the arbiter of fair and balance when it comes to this, because you're saying someone's allowing, you know, a tag team not to have tag rules. You're allowing your husband to, I don't know, circumvent the health codes of certain states with his fake immunizations and Lord knows whatever else he has planned to injure Seth Rollins. And, you know, I'm sure Todd, since he's the legal expert of the team, can tell us about having the responsibility of knowing if someone's going to commit a crime, reporting it to the proper authorities.
Well, Rich, it's been fun. Is there anything else from tonight's episode of Raw we didn't cover that you've got some thoughts on that maybe we didn't get to?
Gosh. Well, I mean, Leo Rush, we should have a moment of silence.
Lashley. I just hear that every time you say Leo Rush.
It's great because that's now one of my go-to. I took Pat McNeil, and it's oh, man. I sent it to Cam because they didn't believe I made it. I was like, that's just – it made my, I was like, of all the times Wade, I've never heard Wade like try to do a black voice, but it's not really a black voice because it's Leo Rush screaming like any person, regardless of race, gender, or you're just going to hear it. Like my 6-year-old, if he was awake, he'd just come in and scream. Like it's like that old meme where, I don't know if you've seen it before, where someone says one word over and over, and then another group of people start saying the word over and over, and then like random people start coming in the room saying it over and over. And that's how I imagine Lashley. Like people, I'm in my office at Pitt, and then my secretary just runs in and says, Lashley. It's just, yes. So I hope everyone had a good time with our Lashley and Leo Rush. Two-man show right there.
Damn. All right, Rich, thanks again. Throw your Twitter out there and I'll plug your live cast again.
Sure, it's at @Rich_fan, FANN, and look forward to chatting with you.
Awesome, thanks Rich, really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
So catch Rich every Saturday or every weekend. You can download it whenever. The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. It usually goes up on Saturday nights, and he covers one topic in depth, and it's good stuff. You should check it out. It's free. It's part of the PW Torch Livecast lineup. 7 shows every 7 days. A new show each day. In other words, a different format each day of the week with shows covering Impact, ROH, NXT, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, Wrestling Night in America on Sunday nights with Greg Parks, which includes talking about all of wrestling's big events, the ones that just happened and the ones that are upcoming. That's the focus of the show. And they also do the live, Greg hosts the live call-in show after WWE pay-per-views on Sunday nights when his show moves to later in the night after the pay-per-views. And the Best of Edition on Fridays, where I handpick an interview or a show covering a big angle or happening in professional wrestling, and then the deep dive on Saturday. So lots of good stuff there. Just search PW Torch or Pro Wrestling Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to the PW Torch livecast lineup. There's really good content, really good shows. Everybody there just does a great job on that whole strip of shows each day. So check it out. You're missing out on some different voices covering different topics than we cover here on the Wade Keller shows. So check it out. You can also find the show listings and stream the show at pwtorchlivecast.com. So follow me on social media. You heard Rich's social media. Follow me at The Wade Keller on Twitter. You can follow our brand at PW Torch on Twitter. You can also follow us at PW Torch on Instagram and on Facebook at facebook.com/PW Torch and facebook.com/Wade Keller Torch to friend me. And be sure to check out PWTorch.com for wrestling results, TV reports, pay-per-view reports, breaking news, special features, flashbacks, and more. Just put up my reports earlier on Monday on the Raw from 5 years ago and 10 years ago. I always enjoy doing that. It's fun to kind of look back at what was going on this week in Raw history, who was there, who's still there, who's doing very different things now, from Brad Maddox to Cody Rhodes to Batista, a lot of names where I'm like, oh, I haven't thought about him in quite a while. So check those out at pwtorch.com. You can see what I was saying about WWE shows 5 and 10 years ago. I'll probably do the same thing for SmackDown this week, so you can check that out. All kinds of good reasons to check out pwtorch.com every day. There's content there you're not going to find at other websites, so check it out. And MMAtorch.com is back up and running in a big way with an upgrade in frequency and content with Mike Hisko back at the helm as managing editor and some new writers. Check it out, MMAtorch.com, updated every day. And then PWPodcast.com with written recaps of a pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts that also has more reviews lately than we had earlier this summer. So if you haven't been to the site in a while, check it out. Just, it's always fascinating. I mean, if you're not that it's possible to be bored in society anymore, unless your battery goes dead while you're standing in line at the DMV, then maybe boredom strikes. So we don't really have an excuse for that, but PWPodcast.com, it's, if you're in a mood for wrestling, but you're just not sure, you think you're caught up on news and you don't want to read about today's WWE or whatever it is, just reading what Booker T had to say about Charlotte and Becky Lynch. You know, like, you can just go to PW Podcasts or find what Eric Bischoff had to say about the dying days of the AWA. You don't have to listen to a whole podcast. You can just go and scroll through our great reviewers doing their great work and find out what is happening on all these other podcasts that you just haven't had time to listen to yet. And also, if you do listen to one of these wrestling personality hosted podcasts, you can see what our reviewers had to say about that episode. They rate them 1 to 10 and give their thoughts on the quality of the show compared to other shows. So that is pwpodcasts.com. Written recaps of pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts, including my interviews. So check it out. All right. I'll be by tomorrow with Greg Parks, host of the PW Torch Livecast Sunday edition. We got our Livecast weekend crew joining me as co-hosts here on the post show this week, with Rich from the Saturday show and now Greg from the Sunday show tomorrow on the post SmackDown show. Join us live or send emails during or after the show, and you can be part of the mailbag segment. We have our on-site correspondent lined up from Austin, Texas, and we look forward to talking to you then. So download the show, and we will talk to you next time. If you shop at Amazon, I have a request. When you shop at Amazon, don't go to Amazon.com. That sounds weird. How are you going to shop at Amazon if you don't go there? Well, don't go directly there. Start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. When you go there, there's a giant Amazon logo. Click on it. It takes you right to the Amazon homepage where you were heading anyways, but that small detour tells Amazon, we sent you there. And when they get that message, they send us a commission on everything that you buy. So it's a great way to support us without having to do anything different other than when you shop at Amazon, start at pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for downloading the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Don't forget, you can get these shows with the ads and plugs and commercials all edited out on our special VIP audio feed with a VIP membership. That applies to all four shows that I host during the week, the Wade Keller Post Shows and podcasts later in the week. And also all seven PW Torch live casts, plus all of our VIP exclusive shows throughout the month. There's about 100 of them. I host about 12 per week that are VIP exclusive. The Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, post-pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, and the Fix with Todd Martin. We got a bunch of other great content. Check out full details at pwtorchvipinfo.com. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com. Yes, all the VIP podcasts, including the ad-free versions of this show, are compatible with popular podcast apps on both iPhone and Android. You can also stream the shows right from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. So check out details if you want to support us and get these shows ad-free and a ton of other VIP-exclusive podcasts. That's pwtorchvipinfo.com for more details. We've got a mobile-friendly sign-up form. You can be VIP in about 2 minutes. Go for it, pwtorchvipinfo.com.